You're listening to the High Spot Podcast presented by Brain Stew Radio. Brain Stew Radio is brought to you by Brain Stew Media. Check out studio rates, online mixing deals, and live sound recording by going to brainstewmedia.com. Brain Stew Radio graphics are designed by Skunk Duck Designs. For all of your graphic art needs, Skunk Duck, no one does it better. Brain Stew Radio is happy to be affiliated with Pro Wrestling Magic. Don't rely on superstars to deliver your high-quality, independent pro wrestling. Check out their upcoming schedule at WrestlingIsMagic.com.
Coming down the aisle at a combined weight of 436 pounds, the team of Jeffrey Martin, Brian Berga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
And that can only mean one thing. That means you're listening to the High Spot Podcast. Catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast, as well as our partnership with Brain Stew Radio Network at Brain Stew Radio. Shout out Chris Hamill, our boy there. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew. I am the trendsetter. Alongside is my tag team partner, Jeff Smelly Martin.
That's my nickname, man.
Yes.
I told you it's Broken Jeff Martin.
Broken,
Jeff,
yes.
Smelly Martin. You know, you got to be nicer to me. We are
no,
in the
I
holiday
don't. The
season.
The holidays mean absolutely nothing to me.
And on your New Year's resolution, you've got to put, I got to be nicer to my co-host.
Are you in the Christmas spirit right now? Because I keep hearing you
really.
Listening to that Christmas music all the time.
You know what? I must
that
admit
gets in the mood.
That I do like Christmas music
for
a
Christmas.
Lot. I'm kind of McFoley in a way where I love Christmas music. So, yeah, I'll be playing that, but you know,
Wait, have you decorated the tree yet? Have you decorated the tree?
Oh, yeah, I did during Thanksgiving.
Decorate the house?
I did during Thanksgiving this time. I don't usually wait till like the 22nd or the 20th, maybe even on Christmas Eve to decorate.
Wow, but, so you did it surprisingly early this year.
Yeah, I got a couple things there to decorate, but other than
what
that,
what about your Christmas shopping? You almost done?
Online, baby.
Online. That's like the new thing right now, right? Nobody wants to go anywhere. I mean, I don't like going to the mall even in the summertime. Heaven forbid I go to the mall during the winter and
yeah,
have to punch somebody
fun.
Out for
it
a
used
parking
to be fun
spot.
To do, you know.
It used to be, yeah.
But now online is much easier. Just click and that's it. And
Jeff, have we gotten bitter as we've gotten older?
I know you've definitely
like
gotten
that.
Bitter.
I know I have. I'm just seeing if you'll admit it.
I've
gotten bitter, but admit that you're bitter now.
No, I'm not as bitter as you, but I have gotten a little bit bitter. A little sour on this whole shopping stuff. I used to love it. I used to love it as a kid. Aww. I used to enjoy that, but now
we should call
again,
you Scrooge now.
I've conformed to the masses and I've done doing all my shopping online.
It's more commercialized nowadays, Christmas.
Yeah, speaking of, I'm glad you said commercialized too, yeah. Because you know, it is truth. It is 100% truth that
truth. Ric Flair.
Truth. That Linda McMahon has been appointed or will be nominated to head up the Small Business Administration. So Linda McMahon has a cabinet position.
You know what, Jeff? If it wasn't truer than when people say it, it's true in this sense that WWE's taking over the world now. I mean, WWE now in the White House administration. You know, growing up as a fan of WWE, you would think, you know, before they got the F out, it was the WWF. You'd think, man, this is going to take over the world. And now it is in the United States. It's in the White House, the WWE.
And just the fun with their tweets where they're saying, if anyone knows how to kill small business, it's the McMahons.
Oh, come on.
The Secretary of Treasury will be the million-dollar man, Ted DiBiase. So all those
things. Who would you want better in small business to you know, take the life and squeeze the throat out of their competition than a McMahon?
Exactly. So I'm looking on the brighter side, and I think that
ruthless aggression.
What they
Jeff.
Did with a small business that started as the WWE, and now they've made it this global phenomenon, yeah. The place to be, the number one wrestling promotion by far in the world. So take a look at that, folks. Take a look at the positives that they've done, and just congratulations go out to the McMahon family.
Not to mention
Very
too
impressive.
That a lot of people sometimes look at it. Okay, they call themselves sports entertainment. To Jeff and I, it's still pro wrestling. But you look at all the good also the WWE has done. I mean, when you look away from the program, which we're going to get to in a second, we're going to kind of talk about TLC, the SmackDown pay-per-view that happened less than a couple days ago. But they do such good around the world in the communities of, you know, yeah. their to be a star campaigns and just bringing a lot of stuff with the Make-A-Wish Foundation. So again, it's just great to see that McMahon in there. Who knows, you know, maybe it wouldn't be as bad. And who knows, maybe Vince will run in 2020. Who knows? Can you
Vince
imagine
McMahon
him and Donald Trump going at it?
That should have been his running mate. It should have been nothing against
his vice president.
Mike Pence.
I don't think McMahon would take a vice president
But Trump
position.
McMahon, 2020. How about that?
Who knows?
Should be great.
Should be interesting.
No, right, but congratulations goes out to Linda McMahon.
Yes, of course.
Once again.
Had the privilege of meeting her, although she'll never recognize who I was, but during WrestleMania Access Tour, I had a chance to meet her. I shook her hand before her gigantic security guard was probably going to try to tackle me, and I told her, I thank you.
Oh, yeah, she was with her grandkids.
She was there with her grandkids and Triple H's mother, and I just want to congratulate her, and what a very nice lady she is, and I can't wait. Hopefully only good can come of this, but speaking of hopefully good can come out of something is, you know, we watched the TLC pay-per-view, and, you know, had an impressive card about it. I mean, the main event was obviously AJ Styles versus Dean Ambrose in a TLC match for the WWE World Championship.
Match of the year.
Match of the year candidate, as we'll break it down. But ultimately, what I wanted to ask you, Jeff, is, you know, we got all the, you know, all the, you know, niceties out of the way, but I want to get your take on this, Jeff. What did you think of the overall TLC pay-per-view?
I think what made the match was the main event. If you lump it all with the other matches, it turned out to be maybe a B-plus pay-per-view. But honestly, the match between AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose was the main focus, was the best match of the night. And again, though, that to me is what made the TLC worth watching. I mean, give credit to everybody. They did bust their ass and they did a great job. But if you just look at it, it's like a so-so pay-per-view. It felt like a SmackDown. But then when you see the quality names of Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles, you're going to be impressed. And you're going to be impressed with such an amazing match. Obviously, it was one of Dean Ambrose's best matches he's had. And of course, AJ Styles just continues to prove that he is the best wrestler right now in WWE.
Well, I think there's no question that AJ Styles is basically putting the entire SmackDown brand on his shoulders. And he can carry that weight. But for
not
me,
not his ankle, at least.
Not in his ankle. Unfortunately, he did get injured in it. But again, that just kind of comes with the territory, especially when you go into a match which has a lot of high risk spots, like a TLC match for the title. That's going to happen, you know, and you'd like to think that's not the only thing that got busted.
His pants, man.
He's mooning the crowd. But hey, man, he's proud to show what he's got, right? Hey, more and more power to him. But for me, Jeff, you've told me time and time again, even before we started doing the show, that, oh man, Brian, you're just so nitpicky sometimes. You're being too critical of things. And I would say to you in return, it's like, but isn't that part of always wanting things to be better? Again, it could be the nitpicky thing where you're like, oh, I don't like the way this ended, or I don't like the way the match ended, or I don't like how they're not pushing this guy or that guy or this girl or whatever. But for me, like, when you get into a card like this, which, you know, a good portion of the whole card had, like, gimmick matches. Basically, we had a chairs match, a tables match,
TLC,
a ladder match. And my thing was, you know, I felt the talent, like you said, the effort was there, but I don't think that the execution, per se, was top form. And to me, that kind of took a little bit away from the momentum of the card.
I don't think it's the execution. At the end of the day, what it is, Bri, is that Raw has a much more loaded roster than SmackDown, and that's just how it is.
Here you go, Jeff, again, about the load. You know, the load they have and how big a load that Raw has. You know, enough about the load, Jeff, because, again, we've talked about how roster isn't deep. I get it. But, again, what are you doing? You don't have a deep roster. You have to make sure that when you're hitting your marks and, you know, whatever type of psychology the match is supposed to be, that you're hitting it spot on. Again, I know.
I sometimes feel
but
that
how many times do we sit there
SmackDown
and see botches?
Oh, you're talking about botches.
Not botches. Like, well, for example, a table was supposed to be there, and they messed up, and they had to go back and reset it up. It kind of takes away from the flow of the match, doesn't it?
Kind of, but what I'm talking about is the roster depth, and I'm talking about how, like, SmackDown just feels like it's Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles and James Ellsworth world, and everyone else is living in it. And sometimes Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton knock on the door and are allowed in. But other than that, that's basically it. So when you have a card, six matches, and maybe when I tell you, Brian, when we're watching this, and I go, Brian, I can't believe people actually paid money to see Nikki Bella and Carmella. It's just,
what are you talking about? That's an historic rivalry right there. That's so much heat behind it.
I don't know, man. Like, if it's Raw, I know I get to see, you know, Jericho, Owens, Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns. But I'm going to pay
all that. Jericho on the list is all I need for.
But I'm going to pay, you know, my money and just watch AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose. That's tough. That's tough to do. And,
well, Jeff, you and I being die hardcores like that, we probably would pay money to go see AJ Styles in a match.
Well, yeah. I mean, that'd be the only reason. If you're telling me I'm going to watch AJ Styles. But again, to me, it's a roster death. You know, you go into detail on what you think the botches were in this match.
Well, let's look at it from this perspective here. I mean, botches go twofold. Basically, botches in terms of not just the movesets, but placement of props for gimmick matches. But again, just the all-around outcome and the flow of it. Let's talk about the first match that happened. They wanted to start the show hot, so they had the SmackDown Tag Team titles on the line with Heath Slater and Ryder going against the new formed Wyatt family.
Right.
And we've been talking about how, this is kind of interesting. I can kind of see these guys winning it. But again, ultimately, the match was as good as it was, and I thought Heath Slater and Ryder brought a good sense of effort, as we talk about in here. To me, it was kind of one-sided, and it was really basically the Wyatt family of Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton just toying with these guys. And we have newly crowned SmackDown Tag Team Champions in Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt. But the thing is, to me, what made me feel sad about it, it took the focus away from a potential depth of tag team, which, you know, they built this whole thing around Heath Slater and Ryan, and all of a sudden, boom, it's done like that.
This is the issue. When you have a comedic team like that, they can only go so far. So eventually, a loss will be down the road.
And you say that, and we talk about the New Day, who is about to demolish Demolition's record.
Well,
they're a comedic team, aren't they?
They're a comedic team, but you have, and again, this is going to come out like I'm saying that Rhino and Heath Slater are not talented, but, you know, who do you want to see more? You want to see the New Day, or do you want to see Heath Slater and Rhino? They're put together as far as, like, it only got them so far. Rhino is a part-timer. Rhino is, you know, not the guy he was 10 years ago. Heath Slater, again, a mid-carder, was, you know, and God bless him for what he's been doing with the angle and where he's taken it. He's made himself into a strong mid-carder. But when you put this together, you know it's temporary. It's like a Band-Aid you're putting on this team, and you can only get so far. Now they've, you know, they've had the rematch, and they've come up short again. And you knew that Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton were the team to go. They're the sole survivors of Survivor Series. So for them to think that they were not going to win these tag team titles, kind of, you know, we were spot on in this prediction. We thought they were going to win, and they did. And
I didn't think a rematch was going to happen that soon. I thought they were going to probably save it till, you know, maybe the Royal Rumble.
When you have teams like American Alpha and you have teams like the Usos, it's very easy to put, you know, Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt in those kind of matches. Once they lost their rematch, you could tell that Heath Slater and Rhino, that was going to be it. And, you know, and talking smack, I think it led that they were, you know, a little bit of dissension where they're going to break up or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, definitely disappointment on both of their faces. But Rhino more of like, well, I'm done with this type of thing, and basically walked out on Heath Slater during the interview segment.
So basically, teams like that only have a certain lifespan, and they're always good when they're chasing, and they're always good to be the underdog. But if they're going to play a comedic role like they've been playing, it's better to put it on Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it always depends on when the lifespan ends on it. Sometimes you look for the latter. But again, it looks like that's ended up happening for Heath Slater and Rhino. We have newly formed tag team champions and the first ever title for Bray Wyatt. Long overdue, but he needs Randy Orton's help to do it. So let's see where this leads, because I still think it's going to be a situation where, you know, Randy actually turns on them, and it might lead to something in WrestleMania. But we'll find out, you know, as the weeks go by. But I know a match you were looking forward to on the card, which is your favorite one, and the one you were saying, Brian, I got to see this one. It's amazing. Nikki Bella defeats Carmella in a kind of a street fight, no disqualification, no holds bars. And, you know, towards the end, the match happened. It was what it was. And, you know, Carmella gets back on the microphone after getting, you know, the hell kicked out of her,
you know,
God bless her, saying that it was actually Natty who attacked Nikki Bella at Survivor Series, which cost Team SmackDown that match because they were short already one member. So now it's like they're going to lead into another storyline now.
That was bad,
Brian.
That was just awful. It was awful that that's how she finds out. She's going to believe Carmella after, you know, all that stuff is going down between them. That
you wouldn't believe somebody's been talking trash about you?
No, that she attacked her in the back. I mean, come on, man. That was so bogus. I give Nikki Bella credit. She has taken her wrestling game to another level. And I think also what JR said, too, is that Nikki Bella and Brie, not only have they dated John Cena and Daniel Bryan, but they've also picked up their desire to get better in the ring. And I give credit to Nikki Bella. She has gotten better in the ring. Some of the moves were pretty good. The bumps that she takes for the neck injury that she had, give her credit for that. But you know what? Honestly, last week, I think we were talking to John Canton, and we were talking about Carmella, and we were talking about how much improved she is. I got to tell you this, man. first of all, the ending of the match bothered me was that, you know, the fire extinguisher like that, really? It couldn't have just blinded her or something like that instead of just, oh, it's cold, it's uncomfortable. That was a bad job by the commentators. It was even worse job by Carmella. And, you know, I hate to admit this and I hate to say it, but if it wasn't for her mic skills or because she wasn't attractive, she is by far needs so much more work. It's not even funny. And what saves her is sometimes her promo skills and her ring work. But also, too, if you're going to have this match, Carmella had to win. All the heat that's been on her now has been passed on Natalya, who supposedly sneak attacked Nikki Bella at Survivor Series. And thank you, Natalya, if you really did that. But again, it just made no sense to have Carmella lose. You could have made it where, you know, she got the better end of Nikki Bella in some other way, but for Carmella just to lose like that, it exposed her a lot of her weaknesses in the ring.
Well, she's definitely had those weaknesses, but I think it's been covered up, like you said, about her mic skills, and she's actually pretty good on the mic and has been giving some good promos. The fact that she lost to Nikki Bella, to me, didn't really make much sense, and again, that's just nitpicking like I always do, but if you're trying to build stars, I mean, Nikki Bella, God bless her, but she's not the future of this company anymore. Her time is coming pretty soon, especially since she's on borrowed time due to her neck injury. You're not going to build up Carmella. Just the wrong move, in my opinion. But then you move on to The Miz and Dolph Ziggler. The final time these two are going to go at each other,
yeah, right,
for the Intercontinental Championship in a ladder match. I think every single time there's been an important Intercontinental Championship, it's always been contested in a ladder match. And this one wasn't one to disappoint. It had some pretty good moments in it, too. But, I mean, the way it ended, and hey, finishers are finishers. But then, you know, you have it to the point where I even told you, too, this might be a match where color, meaning you guys cut yourselves, might fit itself in terms of kind of bring this all to a standstill and ending this rivalry. That didn't happen, obviously, since it's a PG show. But you ended with The Miz kicking Dolph Ziggler between the jewels. And, like, what is the WWE done, Jeff? Have they copied now Draymond Green and copied the NBA? Like, listen, we're going to finish all our matches now by kicking people in the groin. Happened with AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose. Happened with Samoa Joe and Shinsuke Nakamura and NXT TakeOver. And now for the Intercontinental Championship, I beat you by kicking you in the nuts and regaining his title.
Well, my issue with the match was that it ended the way it should have been. Miz should have come out on top. And the best part of the match was Maryse in her outfit, smoking hot. The only thing that upset me was that we are, as an audience, we're so used to the, you know, the high spots, no pun intended, you know, with the ladders, that what happens is when they use psychology and when they use it to, you know, hurt a body part, we're all like, yay, oh, you know. So we don't, as a crowd, get enthused. Oh, my God. And before I get to that, how horrible was the crowd reaction every single time during the matches?
Do we need to pan
into that? That, to me, horrible. Why? Every single time. I'm like, okay, all right, one's fine. One a match. Okay, fine. Really, like 30 a match was ridiculous to me. And I just thought I was going to not even mention it on the show. But that was so freaking annoying. But back to The Miz and Dolph Ziggler. Again, we're so used to these coming off the ladder, diving off, or, you know, to use it as a weapon to, you know, to hurt the legs and stuff like that. That was interesting. Good psychology. The Miz is developed as a top heel. And Dolph Ziggler, you know what? You know, I just shake my head. I put my hands up and be like, I don't know. The guy, to me, he has everything. I don't know why the WWE doesn't get behind him. I don't know if it's his call. I don't know whether he's settled for this. I don't know whether this is the direction he wants to take his career, whether he's almost done.
Well, that's the direction he wants to take his career, but everybody's talking about all that he has backstage from obviously expressing his comments when he's unhappy about certain things. But, yeah, it's hard to believe nowadays, Jeff, that he actually was once the world heavyweight champion, and the reaction he got past WrestleMania 29, when he got that huge ovation on Raw and became the champion, and then thanks to Jack Swagger, he gave him the concussion and ended up having to give up the title back. But my God, talk about the highs of highs and now the lows of lows.
He has everything to be a world champion. He has everything.
And even the match I told you, he's got that Shawn Michaels look about him.
Got the God-given ability. It just can go. Really good good to great wrestler, and he just, for some reason, WWE just puts their hands up and they're like, well, no, whatever, The Miz. And good for The Miz. The Miz, this is how it should have played out. The Miz is on fire right now. And, you know, as we look forward to, he will probably put in that main event level pretty soon. And exactly. The best thing that's happened to him was Maurice coming back has added that heel persona, and it just, you know, and not to mention most guys are jealous that he's with Maurice right now. So again, it adds that like jealousy factor. And to me,
well, I think it adds the cheap heat though, but also I think the best thing that happened was when he went off on Daniel Bryan during Talking Smack.
Oh,
and
of
really,
course, that's great
you
too.
Saw for me for the first time, Jeff, I saw the passion in the Miz and the passion he had for, you know, what he does. So you're right. He's now bringing, believe it or not, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm really actually proud that I'm saying this. The Miz is actually bringing relevancy back to a title for the longest time has had no relevancy behind it. And who knows, once he ends up eventually dropping that title to whoever he drops it to, can now finally, which I thought would never happen either, work his way back to the main event picture. But, you know, talk about throwing your hands up, Jeff. I just basically threw my hands up. I mean, it was a good match. Basically, the match between Baron Corbin and Kalisto, which was a chairs match, which was the classic type of storyline which everybody always uses, David versus Goliath, the bully versus, you know, the kid who wants to stand up to the bully. Ended up with Baron Corbin basically taking a lot of abuse on this. He really took a lot of nasty bumps, and I give him credit for that. But still, I have no relation to Baron Corbin. I can't relate to him. And I don't even have the energy to boo him, because by booing him means I'm giving him notoriety that I actually care about his character. I don't.
Giving him attention, basically.
I'm giving him attention when I don't want to give him attention. And hats off to Kalisto, because he took some pretty bad bumps in this one as well. Psychology-wise, made sense. Like, I'm not going to say it wasn't a terrible match, but in terms of about enthusiastic or like we like to talk about, or I like to talk about, have been invested into it, I wasn't. So all in all, it was a good match. Baron Corbin obviously goes over on Kalisto. And, you know, I don't think anybody else saw it going any other way but that. And then the match that you liked the most. I mean, do you want to elaborate more on Baron Corbin?
No, not really. All I want to say is that, you know, Kalisto had a good showing. And, you know, that's about it. I thought there was going to be an upset because Kalisto was able to be right back at the WrestleMania kickoff show. So I thought that he maybe had a chance against Baron Corbin. But, no, it really was, you know, it was an okay match. And I give credit to both guys. But, again, it was an interesting match. Kind of exceeded my expectations, but all in all, I mean, I'm not, like you said, I'm not invested in the Baron Corbin character.
Yeah, and so that's why you kind of just throw your hands up, like, okay, it's over, it's over.
And here's what I'm mad at, Brian. I'm mad at because I thought that Becky Lynch was going to win because she was a honey badger.
Well, I have no idea why you would base anything on it, which just probably proves why you've never won the lottery.
She said she's a honey badger, and I was like, well, that does it for me.
And
she's
took that to the bank as if, oh, wow, she's going to win?
Yeah, the self-proclaimed Honey Badger, wow, you know, said she was going to win, and I thought she was going to retain her title. But kudos to Alexa Bliss. We were talking about last week, one of the most improved wrestlers in general, probably maybe the steal of the NXT, when it came to the draft, the steal of the NXT is Alexa Bliss. Got emotional on Talking Smack afterwards. You can see how much it meant to her. Hey, she just keeps working. She keeps busting her butt, and she's doing a great job, and well-deserved for Alexa Bliss. Now, the crowd was kind of dead for the match. Kind of went a little too long, about 15 minutes. Maybe 5 minutes too long. But again, though, give credit to Alexa Bliss. Brian, anything that this match did, were you surprised Alexa Bliss came away with the title?
No, I wasn't surprised. I wasn't disappointed in the match or disappointed in the competitors like Becky Lynch and Alexa Bliss. What I was more disappointed in terms of this was that if this was going to be Alexa Bliss's moment, would it live up to the hype? Would it be one of those memorable ones? Now, I'm not asking for a classic here. I'm not asking for a 5-star match. It's a gimmick match. It's a table match. But I was hoping that it would live up to the billing. My opinion, unfortunately, it didn't. That doesn't mean that Alexa Bliss didn't deserve what she got. She got the SmackDown Women's Championship. And we've talked about this before. As much as I love Becky as well, I don't think in terms of this scenario right now, trying to build up the depth of that roster, especially in the women's division for SmackDown, this needed to happen because Becky's the kind of character that doesn't really need the title. She's fine on her own. She's fine as that Spitfire, the Honey Badger, Becky Balboa, whatever she wants to call herself, because we like it when she chases. And a kudos goes out to Alexa Bliss because despite the fact that this wasn't a great match in my opinion, to me there were a lot of things going incorrect where like they had to reset things and set things up, and I think they set up the first table way too early in the match because they try to set it up and then try to go into a fight and then come right back to it, and it kind of loses its luster a little bit there because you're like, when is this going to pay off? Alexa Bliss has done an amazing job of the fact that she's about 5 feet, Jeff, and she doesn't talk nor does she act like she's that height. You know, when I look at Alexa Bliss, I look at somebody who is very confident in the mic and very confident in wrestling abilities. Her wrestling abilities have never been a question for me watching her in NXT. Her biggest thing is, did she show the confidence that she could do the moves that she needed to do to make it believable to the audience? I think she's done that. I think this is the right move for the WWE. This is the right move for SmackDown right now. And I've spoken about it before. You like to have the heel champions because you always like them being chased and then kind of getting, you know, barely escaping with the title. So I think this has a great set and a great future for the women's division on SmackDown. Congratulations to Alexa Bliss. Very well deserved. And the future is bright for her. And Becky Lynch, this story ain't over yet.
No, yeah, we'll definitely probably see a rematch between the two. Again, congratulations to Alexa Bliss. And then, Bri, match of the night. Maybe the match of the year when you look back on 2016.
Oh, they don't want none, Jeff.
Definitely top five when we do the end of the year show. We do the top maybe 10 matches of the year. This is definitely up there. AJ Styles proved once again why he is probably the best wrestler in the WWE right now, or maybe in the world. And a lot of people have said it. JR has said it. He is as close to Shawn Michaels as anyone has seen. It's just amazing. He is on point. Rarely does he ever mess up. But, you know, maybe for a bad wardrobe malfunction here and then, the guy is about as 100% as you can go. That 450 splash he did on the table was on point. He's probably the most safest guy, too. You're going to trust him in whatever he's going to do. AJ, talk about AJ Styles first. Not the match, but just talk about how great a worker AJ Styles is.
I mean, to catch a phrase, to me, he's not the face that runs the place, Jeff, or the champ that runs the camp and those gimmicks he uses. To me, he is simply what he says he is. Phenomenal. I think the great thing about AJ Styles, Jeff, is the fact that he's so believable. Similar to maybe a Shawn Michaels. You believed everything Shawn Michaels did. Every single move and thing that he did in the ring made sense, was for a specific purpose. It wasn't just being flashy. And we've seen before in the past, even AJ during his time in TNA, and prior to that when he first started off in WCW, he did these movesets to get attention. Granted, there's no doubt in my mind he's still athletic at this stage in his career and this stage in his life, depending on how old he is. You know, he's 39 years old.
And he's got lift on that springboard.
He can still do all this
phenomenal
stuff,
elbow.
But he chooses when he wants to do it.
Yeah.
And to me, like, even the wardrobe malfunction, which is funny, we're always kind of, you know, we're giggling like a little schoolgirl. Like,
no, you know what? No one pays attention.
Nobody pays attention
because he's that good in the ring.
Exactly. And you just made my point for me. Exactly what I was going to say. It makes no sense because, yeah, he had a hole in his tights. People were kind of jawing about it in the crowd. But again, they paid attention to the match. And that just shows you what a great quality performer AJ Styles was. And again, I'll give kudos to Dean Ambrose as well, because, you know, those, you need a dance partner to be good. And, you know, Dean Ambrose has always been pretty good in the ring. He's always worked well with a lot of talent. But to me, AJ Styles isn't just a talent, Jeff. He's a special individual. And that's why I hope, you know, you and I said it before, and you're like, man, what would it have been like if AJ Styles came in a couple years
before? Yeah, you can't look at that.
You can't look in the past anymore,
man.
You kind of wish. Yeah. But again, I kind of agree with AJ, though, that if he didn't go to Japan, maybe he wouldn't be in this position in his career anyway to begin with.
He needed that confidence to say that he belonged in WWE.
Yeah.
I mean, he said it a lot of times. He didn't think he belonged. So now, you know, he definitely walks around with that swagger, definitely walks around with that confidence that, you know what, damn it, he deserves to be there. Like you said.
And I equivalent it to Jericho, though, too. And I'll let you finish your point, though, is because, like, with Jericho, you know how much time he has left, but you enjoy it because even at the stage of his career, too, he's 46 years old. He's still having great matches. AJ Styles is going to have great matches for the next 2 years. So, guys, enjoy it when you watch an AJ Styles match because it really is something to look forward to and watch.
I try to savor the moment. I don't try to look at it as like, oh,
savor,
man, 2 years, whatever. Oh, he's only 39. No, man. I live for the moment with AJ Styles. Yeah. And you got to admit, though, this was probably Dean Ambrose's best match he's ever had. And I bet you this was probably the best match that they've had together. So,
And that X Factor included itself too. We're discussing what was going to happen with James Ellsworth. You know,
yeah, and you, the only way to go is turn him heel.
The only way to go, because then it made no sense. Everything he had done to build up to get under AJ's skin and propping in and poking James Ellsworth as the con that Dean Ambrose would use finally turned on him. which was appropriate for that match.
Yeah, and you know, James Ellsworth thinks that he has a better shot against AJ Styles because he beat him three times, so he thinks that AJ is prime for the pickings. But although, you know, AJ Styles did not walk away unscathed, he did suffer a minor ankle injury, yes, which they showed on SmackDown. Hopefully it's not, you know, too bad, because we thought we were going to see James Ellsworth challenge AJ Styles on SmackDown, but that wasn't the case. It just set up Dean Ambrose coming in and putting the dirty deeds on Ellsworth, and Ellsworth would prove to be integral or maybe vital in the main event between Dean Ambrose and The Miz. But I want to get your reactions on SmackDown right after TLC, the first one after TLC. Your thoughts on how that show went?
Well, I mean, it's kind of hard because they had built up TLC so much, which I felt, in my opinion, you know, fell a little flat besides the main event, which like you and I kind of agree on, kind of saved the event. I think SmackDown kind of continued on. I mean, we wanted to see what was going to happen with AJ Styles. We found out he got injured, like you said, right? But the whole James Ellsworth scenario, I think, for the most part, to me, it kind of felt like a night off. I got to be honest with you, with SmackDown, it felt like a night off. Like after a big event, you're like, you know, we're going to just relax a little bit here. We had a tough night two nights before, so we're gonna take it easy here. Obviously, AJ didn't compete. The world title match was kind of was obviously called off. And to supplement that, we had to put Dean Ambrose in the main event to fight The Miz, which we'll get into the reason why he fought The Miz in a little bit later. But it kind of felt like things were just kind of being plugged in a way last minute. So I wouldn't say it's one of their best shows, which is a downfall because you want to get momentum from a live show like a pay-per-view like TLC. But I wouldn't say it was a great show.
And then, of course, what saved it was The Miz and The Miz TV angle with Dean Ambrose. Yeah. And, of course, they would go one-on-one for the Intercontinental title. And then, of course, James Ellsworth would interject himself in that matchup and cost Dean Ambrose the victory. So, eventually, the payoff is going to be that Dean Ambrose is going to kick the living snot out of James Ellsworth. If not this week, if not next week, the week after, but eventually
it's gonna happen.
And where AJ Styles fits into this, well, let's just hope that he is on the mend and he's gonna feel better. But again, talk about The Miz getting, you know, up there in the echelon now. He's fighting Dean Ambrose. He's getting up there. He's been teaming up with AJ Styles in dark matches. Eventually, the rise of The Miz is going to happen. And
I think it's already happening,
you know,
Jeff.
It's good to see.
I think it's already happening. You know why? Because you look at that segment of Miz TV and how he absolutely not only stuck it to Dean Ambrose, but kind of flipped it on him, saying, you know what, how could you really be surprised on this? Because Dean Ambrose went on saying he's not angry. He was just a little surprised that James Ellsworth would do this after he got him a SmackDown contract, literally handed him one, which was true. And then The Miz goes, how could you even say that? Because weren't you the one using and abusing James Ellsworth to get under AJ Styles' skin? Kind of using him to annoy AJ to the point that you can get what you wanted out of him, which is what ended up happening. And then how could you be surprised he turned on you? And what was even greater than that is that Miz had talked about it, especially after TLC when he had beaten Dolph Ziggler, about what are we going to do? Give participation medals now? So he ended up giving Dean Ambrose on the show the first ever Miz TV participation award, just literally sticking it to him, which caused obviously Daniel Bryan to come out here, create the Intercontinental Championship main event for SmackDown. But again, great work by The Miz as a heel. He's somebody that the crowd can really hate, but at the same time, you kind of have to respect at the same time.
And again, one of the key pieces to The Miz was Maurice. So definitely, yes. The Miz is on fire. Yow! I can't believe I just did that, but yeah.
It's pretty good, actually.
It's pretty good, right?
Yes. But again, we had another scenario where Carmella came out, talked about the whole Nikki Bella angle. It was a no contest. They did this dumb storyline where they chased her. She literally gets beat up in the ring by Natty, which you would expect because Carmella's not that good in the ring. They chase her down. All of a sudden, Natty comes out and gets confronted by Nikki. And Nikki does the complete, I can't believe you betrayed me, or I can't believe she walks away. And Natalya's trying to defend herself. Wherever that storyline goes, you know, it has potential for good. But if that's the storyline they're going to go with, deal me out. I'm not really interested. You had the Hype Bros defeat the Ascension, who's been in purgatory for the longest amount of time. They're not rising from the netherworld or the nether region, whatever you want to talk about, the Ascension.
The nether region.
Yes, that's what it feels like right now for the Ascension. You know, and we had another rematch between Baron Corbin and Kalisto. Kalisto's trying to show his heart, wanting an immediate rematch with Baron Corbin. Same thing applied. Now, granted, this is a little bit different from TLC. Basically, Kalisto was on the offense a lot of times, and then basically towards the end. It was about maybe a 6-minute match where Baron Corbin squashed him like a bug. And then we had Chad Gable, individual match with Tyler Breeze. And this is another shame for me because Tyler Breeze is such a talented performer, Jeff. And so is Chad Gable. But the fact that, you know, Fandango.
Fashion Police. And
the Fashion Police. I mean, I get it. But again, you have talent there. Why aren't you using it? Why are you just creating something for comedic relief? Unless Vince is in the back laughing, ho, 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 that's really funny.
Well, I mean,
we
probably got the gist of SmackDown. And basically, it was about the Miz and Ambrose. And
but then it was also Alexa Bliss's celebration. Yeah, she was going to celebrate her conquering of Becky Lynch. And then that led to, obviously, Becky interrupting and going to lead to a rematch. At what time, we don't know, because Alexa Bliss is the champ, and she's going to do it on her terms, not Becky's now. So
that was
basically the synopsis of SmackDown
there. Good for the heel champion there to walk away from Becky Lynch, of course, antagonize her even more. And then 205 Live came on the air on the network, and of course, the rematch between Rich Swann and the Brian Kendrack. Rich Swann gets the win, TJ Perkins gets involved, and then all of a sudden you could see a triple threat maybe coming up in the next episode between TJ Perkins, the Brian Kendrack, and Rich Swann. So we'll see where that goes from there. But again, you know, 205 Live is a very entertaining show, and kudos to Rich Swann for you know, being the champion last week. And again, though, the Brian Kendrack still involved, and you know, TJ Perkins, we'll see. He's kind of fallen a bit from grace since being the champion, so we'll see how far maybe he can get involved in the triple threat and see if he can recapture the title.
Here's the thing with 205 Live in the Cruiserweight division: if I'm still in the mindset that, you know, as good as these guys are and as talented as they are, despite they give you like vignettes and promos about them during Raw. I'm not saying they do any better on SmackDown, but right now I don't have any connection with these guys. It's obviously a different dynamic, 205 Live, or just having them on Raw compared to the Cruiserweight Classic. It's just a way different dynamic. Could be the audience. I don't think it has anything to do with the audience. I think it just has to do with who are these guys. We need to know who they are.
You know what the best thing is? For travel sake and everything, what they need to do is they need to have this show on either before NXT on Wednesday. They really need to, because what's happening is that after everyone leaves after SmackDown Live show, only a few people are staying for the show, and you're not getting that crowd atmosphere. And I'd much rather have this show on Full Sail. Now you're talking. Now we were talking about before privately. We were talking about about NXT ever going live. If they ever do that, they need to fill it with the cruiserweights, and you could still put the cruiserweights on Raw, but it's better for them to travel, say, from Raw to, you know, someplace on Wednesday or whenever they shoot these things, and they can do it in a series.
Yeah.
Because these guys, they're traveling from Raw. Then they got to go to SmackDown. Then they got to go tour with the NXT. It's a tough schedule for these guys, man. It really is. The WWE has not done them any favors by scheduling them on Tuesday nights. They just should be on Tuesday nights just in general, or be on NXT.
Yeah, the formatting of how it goes is kind of confusing too, because by the time 205 Live is done, I mean, I don't want to stay anymore and watch Talking Smack. I think Talking Smack was great immediately after SmackDown was over. Had that nice dynamic about it. 205 Live should theoretically work its way in either before Raw, should take an hour away from Raw as the audience is there. I don't know. I agree with you that it needs to be part of that type of close-knit atmosphere. Not because they can't get people to be there, but it needs that close-knit dynamic to kind of bring out the energy and to showcase these guys more.
A 12-year-old, a 13-year-old is not going to go crazy for these guys as a wrestling fan like you or I would go, because me and you would be like, hey, Brian, let's go to Full Sail and let's watch these guys in action. Let's watch TJ Perkins. Let's watch Rich Swann. Let's watch Gallagher. Let's watch Noam Dar. And these guys, we've seen them in the indies. We've seen what they can do. A kid, and I'm not going to demean a child or whatever like that.
Go ahead.
So we do best.
But it's not about demeaning a child, Joe. No, I get what you're saying. But we appreciate it.
Exactly.
We appreciate for what it is. But at the same time, although we may not care as much as, like, who are these guys? Who's really TJ Perkins? Or what type of personalities you have? Or Rich Swann, who's now the Cruiserweight champion. We know who Brian Kendrick is, but that's all we know. We know the Brian Kendrick. We know his history. We know his backstory. We still don't know who these guys are. I think that is the bridge between fans like us and that 12-year-old kid that you're demeaning.
Did Flair's comments on the Cruiserweights, was that out of nowhere? I mean, was that necessary to talk about the Cruiserweights and kind of demean them?
I don't think so. I mean, and this goes back to my statement before, you know, look at the list, the who's who of list of guests we've had on here, Jeff, which is, they've told me before, they don't think the cruiserweight title is a demeaning title. To me, I think when you label somebody a cruiserweight, you've already basically given them a ceiling, and not a glass ceiling they can shatter through. It's basically the ceiling. You are just this, and that is it.
But did you think Ric Flair's comments were disparaging by saying that?
Yeah, I think so, too. You shouldn't. Why should he comment on it? In his days in WCW, if it wasn't for the cruiserweight division...
True.
WCW wouldn't have had a chance to compete with WWE because, as Rey Mysterio said, and Eddie Guerrero, God rest his soul, said they were the workhorses of that company, and they drew more eyes to people to watch it because at that stage, who was really wanting to see Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan go at it for the 15th millionth time? Or Ric Flair and Arn Anderson and the Four Horsemen, and as exciting as it was, nobody wanted to see that anymore because... those weren't main events where we're going to be like, wow, five-star matches. No, it was the cruiserweights. So to me, Ric Flair, as much as I respect him and he's a legend and all these great attributes of Ric Flair, has no right to talk about the cruiserweight division, or in my opinion, has no right to talk about, you know, wrestlers supposedly when he was talking about Finn Balor, who was going to be a main guy, who was the main guy before he got injured on Raw, that, you know, it should be Seth Rollins because he's bigger and stronger. How many times do we keep hearing this? How many times do I have to hear that Daniel Bryan, he was an unbelievable wrestler? Oh, really? He's not a believable wrestler.
Yeah,
but you believe a 50-year-old Guy Goldberg can destroy the Beast Brock Lesnar in 18 seconds. Yeah. That's more believable. Okay, I guess I'm out of the loop here, Jeff. I don't know.
I think we like Ric Flair for his honesty, but to me, sometimes the honesty can be a little bit disparaging. And when you're trying to...
It still has an old school mentality.
Yeah, when you still have that 205 Live that you're starting to build something, right? You're starting to build it. You don't want one of your legends to come out and just disparage it. I mean, WWE has no control over what Ric Flair says on his show, but you know, you probably want to think about what you're doing. He says he likes T.J. Perkins, he likes those guys, but they aren't going to draw like Sasha or Charlotte will. And now, not only you're not comparing them to the same male talent, now you can't even compare them to the female talent.
Well, I think talent is talent, Jeff. I mean, obviously there's men and
women.
Maybe that's my
old school mentality.
Maybe that's your old school mentality. Who knows? But I think talent is talent. But when you say these guys won't draw any money, what you're basically doing is you're basically kind of just, you know, sweeping the rug underneath them. Who's to say? I mean, how many times did Ric Flair, and I'd love to have him on the show, and eventually maybe we'll have him on the show. I would love to say, Rick, how many times did people say, your old buddy, Ole Anderson, said to you, what good are you to me now that you lost to Kurt Hennig on TV on Raw when he left the WWE and went back to WCW? How many times have people been told you'll never draw money? And they have. I'm sure people said, John Cena will never draw money. He's just a glorified bodybuilder. And now he's one of the biggest stars in the WWE. So when you have talent and guys like that saying, I know they've had experience. I know they know because they've been in the business a long time. What is those it factors and those qualities? But come on, you're going to do that to the cruiserweights who have done nothing to you, and basically you have cruiserweights, not these particular ones, but you have the cruiserweights to thank for prolonging your career for as long as it was.
Yeah, it kind of really is the truth, though. The cruiserweights in WCW were kind of the, you know, they did the dirty work, I guess, in that for the first hour to set up for, you know, NWO, because no one's going to watch just for, you know, they built to something. They built when they had 3 hours. They were the, you know, the driving force there in WCW. So, I mean, Ric Flair, just, you know, choose your words different, or just don't disparage the cruiserweights, because
it's like the old school mentality too. If you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all.
And for Ric Flair, it works.
Unless you're on the High Spot podcast,
especially for Ric Flair, it works because he has such a high what he says. People take into consideration because he has, you know, people hold him in such high regard.
Yeah.
He is probably the greatest, you know, wrestler of all time.
So he's Ric Flair,
because he's Ric Flair. So, and something else that bothers me too is, and what they do a good job in. I love the commentary team of Mauro Ranallo, Corey Graves, and Austin Aries. Austin Aries is hurt now, so that's why he's doing broadcasting. Of course, isn't hurt to, you know, maybe pick a future after your wrestling career, and I think he's done a great job as an announcer. Also, what I don't like is, listen, we're a show, we give our thoughts on wrestling. We give our thoughts on mostly WWE, but we like to get everything else involved too. But when you start spreading news that's not the truth, when we start maybe talking about rumors that really, you know, we have no business talking about it because we don't have sources. We don't come here and saying we're your source for information or inside stuff. That's separate. That's other people do that. But when you do something and when you talk about somebody's future and when you... I don't know, when you try to criticize somebody and not knowing what exactly are the facts, it's, and I'm not putting out any names, but I'm just saying, like, get your story straight, or make sure you're a legitimate news story organization, and make sure that you're, you know, not spreading rumors about somebody, because what happened to Mauro Ranallo this week is just horrible, because everyone's talking stuff and it's not even nowhere near the truth. The man has years on his contract, and if you're not a fan of him, fine, don't listen to him. Don't criticize the guy, because he actually adds passion and energy, something that you know, you want to see his fans. It makes us get excited. And yes, I know the thing on him is not every match is WrestleMania. I get that. But you know what? He tries, and he tries to make it enjoyable for everyone to listen to. And I get my hats off to Mauro Ranallo. Just don't spread rumors and don't make untruths about somebody that you don't know nothing about.
Well, yeah, man. I appreciate your enthusiasm on that, Jeff. I agree to an extent, too. I mean, when you start talking about other people's business, which you have no right to talk about, or it's really none of our business, or there's nothing reliable to fall back on. Yeah, what's the point of doing that in terms of just trying to make news or attention for yourself if you're that individual? But in this case, Ranallo is so highly respected for me, because I remember watching him and listening to him when he was doing Elite XC and all these mixed martial art events and stuff he did for Japan. But yeah, that's just a whole other class in itself, where like... Similar to Ric Flair. I mean, why are we making comments on something that we basically have no, I would say no right to talk about, but have no basis of information to follow up on? So with the whole Ranallo thing, I agree with you in terms of that. But you know what? To me, he's one of the best ones in the WWE right now. I've never been a huge fan of Michael Cole. I respect him as a commentator. I know he's come up the ranks to do and be the voice of Raw in the WWE. But Ranallo is a voice unto himself, and I think he's a great job for SmackDown. And like I said, he has many years on his contract, which I'm looking forward to listening as the years go by.
And again, it makes him very enjoyable. And now we head to Monday Night Raw. And Bri,
oh boy.
And you know what? Let me just talk to you, Bri. I mean, the last couple of weeks on Monday Night Raw, I think to everybody's opinion, it feels like a little bit of a nostalgia, because I feel like I'm watching some stuff in the Attitude Era, because, you know, this past Monday night got a little bit edgy, got a little bit like, I was looking at it, I was even blushing, because I was like, wait a minute, is this like...
Were you blushing because you're watching Lon and some lingerie?
But I'm saying just the stuff that they were talking about, like, you know, the whole when you had to take off your pants and just all that. It just was like, wow, am I watching like 1999 Monday Night Raw? It felt like
what it reminded me of was, remember Ric Flair had won the rights to go out with Baby Doll in the NWA, or in the, I think it was Crockett Promotions.
Who was that?
It was part of the Four Horsemen, and basically he got beat up and got thrown into the
pool.
Yeah,
but who beat him up though?
That I don't remember. It wasn't Magnum TA. It wasn't Magnum TA.
Was one of the Freebirds?
No, he was on a rivalry with the Freebirds.
Garvin,
I think so.
Because he was Baby Doll, right? So it was the guy. Oh man, he was inducted to the Hall of Fame with the Freebirds, I think.
Oh, I know you're talking about.
Oh man.
Wow. Well, we'll have to look back and talk about it and mention his name before. But it reminded me of that, like you said, and also like, remember the whole Dean Ambrose thing? And Dean Ambrose, Dean Malenko. Remember he was
with
Lita, and he got ambushed. Same scenario. It's been a long time since we've seen that, but you know what? Got a little annoyed. Gotta be honest with you. Not at the whole scenario with the Enzo thing and Lana and Rusev, but more it's like, man, is Big Cass really look like a clean cut, 100% babyface doofus, man? Like, he goes out and he's like, can I get your phone? Because I need to warn my buddy that he's doing something bad. Enzo's a big guy. He's not a big guy, but he's a big boy. He can handle himself, and clearly he got his ass handed to him by Rusev. But it was just a funny segment in general. I didn't get that. But again, hey, we got the return, Jeff, of the Big Show. He finally came back, and you know what? I gotta be honest, he's looking pretty good now.
Yeah, good for the
Big
Show.
Lost some weight, man.
Again, you know, you're probably gonna see him around this time, because eventually he's gonna set up the feud, I guess, with Shaq at WrestleMania, so he's gonna get some work in. But
I don't know that's definite. Maybe he might be Braun Strowman. He's been putting Braun Strowman over in a lot of house shows, you know, with body slam challenges. So who knows? Maybe Braun Strowman is the, you know, passing the torch over to him.
Eventually, I would say so, but I think they still have their eyes set on Shaq and the Big Show. But of course, the Big Show has become like an ambassador at WWE, so good to see the Big Show back. And of course Kevin Owens and the Chris Jericho, the friendship that, you know, seems to be like heading towards disaster.
But basically on Raw they finally spoke about the 500-pound elephant in the room, Jeff. Seth Rollins came out, opened the show, which we're used to, about 20-minute segments to open the show of Raw, and basically stated the one thing that has been kind of neglected this entire time since the last time we saw him, Triple H. Seth Rollins wants a piece of Triple H, and now he knows the only way to get it is to become the Universal Champion. He's got to go through Kevin Owens, and in order to go through Kevin Owens, he's got to take out everything associated with him, which is Chris Jericho. And he did that initially the week before on Raw, pedigree him on top of a car, which was, again, kind of Attitude Era-like, was a message to Triple H. And now we know that Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns are going to go one-on-one, which to me really doesn't make much sense. We've been trying to take Roman Reigns out of the title picture. He is the United States champion. Now we're throwing him back into the Universal title picture as the United States champion. For that reason why, I don't know, just because I guess we can't do Seth Rollins a fifth or sixth time. I guess that's the reason why Roman Reigns is in the situation. I thought by this time we've already had Jericho turn. There are signs that's going to happen. The friendship and the best friendship between Kevin Owens and Jericho seems to be disintegrating before our eyes, but I thought by this time that would be happening. Does Roman Reigns make sense in this situation, Jeff?
I think so, in the aspect that I think what they're pushing is Roman Reigns beating Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns having both belts. And then
really?
I think it'll kind of be to like a kind of like a heel Roman Reigns. I think we're going to lean towards that. I think that what we were talking about
before. It's bad enough he's the champ. Now he's going to hold two titles.
Well, I mean, it all is going to lead to if Conor McGregor is going to have two titles, so can Roman Reigns. I think it's just a chance to get him. You know, that's my idea.
That's a great point, actually. I didn't think about that.
And so it could, you know, it could lead to heel Roman Reigns and against you know, Seth Rollins eventually. But again, also too, the fact that out of the blue Seth Rollins mentions Triple H, right? Yeah. Out of the blue, it's been months, and now all of a sudden, now you like you said, the elephant in the room in Triple H. How is Triple H gonna, you know, come back? You know, everyone thinks that this matchup is gonna be set for WrestleMania or maybe the Royal Rumble. I kind of think the Royal Rumble because they got to sell out the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
So we could have something at the Royal Rumble. But just to call out of Triple H out of the blue again is just, you know, wow, man. It took this long to talk about, you know, Triple H.
Yeah, I kind of had the attitude, too. Like, what took you so long?
Yeah.
Seriously. And again, you know, Royal Rumble, they're trying to sell that out. Who knows? Leading up to WrestleMania. Only time will tell. But again, you know it's that time of year that's going to happen. But, you know, other things in terms of the card, wasn't a big fan of. We had a surprise that Jericho was going to go one-on-one with Roman Reigns. Obviously, by now stating that Roman Reigns is the champion, going to face Kevin Owens at Roadblock, the end of the line. It's clear to see that this is the makings of the end of Jericho Kevin Owens, which I'm sure all fans are distraught about. But also for me, what's got me kind of interested in is that the main fact that you had Chris Jericho and Roman Reigns, which is a really good match, and kudos to Roman Reigns and Jericho, they work really well together. But that wasn't the main event, Jeff. You would think that being the main event. No, the main event was basically Charlotte coming out after Sasha Banks had challenged her to another history-making match, which you've already seen on NXT, a 30-minute Iron Man match, Iron Woman match, I guess, if we want to be politically correct nowadays, with Sasha Banks and Charlotte wrestling for, what, the eighth, ninth time for the title.
Yeah.
And if record shows, she's undefeated on pay-per-views when the title's on the line, so you're kind of thinking it's going to go the other way around now. And Charlotte's going to become the champion, and then, you know, Sasha has to reinvoke her rematch clause and all this chaos. But again, it wasn't the main event. And Charlotte came out basically crying. The crowd was, you know, a lot of people, Jeff, have been telling me, I want to get your opinion on this, about how far Charlotte's come as a heel. I think she's a true heel. She does it great. She gets booed everywhere now. That's what you want as a true heel. But still, she doesn't have that dynamic of controlling the crowd, because the crowd ultimately controls her. And she doesn't have her timing right. She gets very... what's the word I'm looking for? She gets very
flustered,
aloof. Yeah, when the crowd's not in her way and things aren't going her way, calls out her father, wants to apologize, basically slaps him in the face again.
Shades of Stephanie and Linda McMahon.
Exactly, or shades of what happened maybe 5 months beforehand when Charlotte basically kicked her father to the curb. Ric Flair crying his eyes out. Sasha coming in for the save because she respects Ric Flair so much, and getting her butt handed to her and thrown in the post, and laying Sasha Banks in front of Ric Flair saying, "This is the one you've chosen over me," and that ends your show? Is that main event worthy? Did you listen to the promo? Is that main event worthy?
Here's my issue with that on a lot of levels. Everyone I've heard compliments Charlotte. She's the top heel in WWE. I don't think so.
No, I wouldn't agree with that.
I think that it was a good move by slapping her dad. I think it adds more heat to her, makes her really a villain. That I agree with. Yes, the beating she put on Sasha Banks, again, makes her heelish. The fact that they go the top heel in the company, I really don't think so. Far from it. I think her issue is, yes, she is delivering better promos, like when she's looking at her dad. But the thing is here, too, is like she's looking at her dad, and she really wants to tear up and swell up. Like she's like, I can't believe I'm saying that to my dad. And you see Ric Flair is like, do it, you know, pushing her to do it and giving her that face like, come on, you know, edging her on to go continue. I give her credit for that. But the fact that she still does sound aloof when the crowd, she can't handle the crowd. She needs to do it better. A little bit more work and she'll get to that. But again,
I would say,
man,
more than a little right now.
Okay, maybe a little, you know, but
you look at the greats like Ric Flair, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Chris Jericho, even Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins, the list goes on and on. John Cena, they can control the crowd. If the crowd's turning on them, to me, the best in the business, Paul Heyman. If you're against them or you're trying to hijack the show, they'll turn right up on you. Charlotte has yet to learn that aspect. And in my opinion, she's getting worse.
Wow, geez.
That's me, though. That's me. I think she's getting worse because by drawing attention to it, you're acknowledging that it's affecting you. But go ahead. Go on.
Well, I mean, there is a way to, you know, antagonize a crowd by acknowledging them, but I just don't think she's doing that. And I think that's the only issue. I think, you know, it was really evident the night after WrestleMania where she had the crowd overtake her in Dallas. So I think I think she has improved from that in time, maybe. I hope so, because that's the only thing that's stopping her, because I think the promo was solid towards her dad. I think the beatdown on Sasha was good, and I think it made that. But do I really want, like, I the feud has gone too long. Bayley's been stuck in limbo, and most likely we are going to see the women's title against change hands at Roadblock, because I really don't think that Charlotte is going to, you know, go, you know, end her losing streak, end her pay-per-view winning streak at Roadblock. I think that it'll go 30 minutes, and I think that Charlotte will come out on top. So to me, this feud between Charlotte and Sasha Banks, just I don't see an end to it. I think they've done a disservice by playing hot potato with the title. It should have ended way before. And I think the only victim right now is Bayley, who just seems to be stuck in limbo, because what also doesn't make sense is, I don't know if you noticed, when Bayley comes out, the reaction is not the same. It's not the same. It's kind of, she's been put to the back burner. So I think this feud, yes, it's good for the women's division, but it really, you know, hinders Bayley, and it's just gone on too long. The rivalry has just gone on too long. And to end the note, look, they've ended Raw now like almost like 3 weeks in a row with the women closing it out.
Yeah.
So while it's a good thing for the women's division, I don't think it's a good thing for like the company in general as far as the guys and stuff like that. And again, it's not being sexist.
It's not being sexist, but
it's just showing
like that.
It's not a good thing that, you know, that your world champion, men on the men's side, can't close out the show.
No, but it also proves that the same point I'm trying to make here, though, from what you said in your statement, which is very well said. But here's the thing, too. If you're ending the last 3 weeks or 4 weeks as the women on your main event side, it begs two questions, Jeff, real quick. It begs, what does that say about the male talent? What does it say about the male? And again, this isn't men and women, but what does that say about the universal title picture? How that's not getting the attention it needs? Is it saying that the women's championship is now over more than the universal title? And also, is it saying to me, is the WWE force feeding now the women's division to us as opposed to us wanting more of it? Because they keep giving us the same thing now, and the crowd looks like they want something different. They want Bayley in there in a certain way, but she's losing momentum. Like you said, the crowd reaction isn't the same. So you're kind of wondering, are they playing with fire here and playing a dangerous thing where, again, we as fans say, hey, we want this, give it to us, okay. But then after a while, all right, say, I love pizza, right? But I have pizza every single day and we get sick and tired of it.
Was it a right way to end it? Yeah, I would say this was the right way to end it, because it was
I would have ended it on the Jericho Roman
really?
Reigns.
Wow, okay, because it was powerful. Because this was powerful. Her slapping her dad and the beatdown she gave Sasha Banks, it was powerful.
But we've seen it before, though.
Exactly, that's the issue. I have no issue with it closing the show. The thing is, we're seeing it already on a constant basis. We've seen the title change hands. Then we've seen this. Kind of, I don't know. It's just like something should close out 1 hour and then something should close out the next hour. I just, you know, I think there's equal time, and I think you should maybe go 1 week, the women, next week the men's title, the universal title, but it's got to flip-flop, just like the women's title flip-flops.
Exactly, right? But again, it loses its luster when it does that. I mean, we'll see as the weeks go by. I mean, everything's now building up to WWE Roadblock, end of the line, and see how that card builds itself out. You know, it's going to happen fairly soon, in 2 weeks, on the 18th of December. So we'll see how the card pans out there. Well, obviously, Jeff and I will break it down for you as it goes out. We'll be, you know, how it's going to book, how it's going to lead into after this is going to be the Royal Rumble. So that's the one everybody's kind of really looking forward to. No offense to the WWE Roadblock, but right now all this is setting up to the road to WrestleMania. So leading into that, we'll definitely have a lot more to talk to you guys about and guests on the show as well, as you catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast.
And real quick, too, also congratulations to Nakamura, who regained the title back against Samoa Joe in Osaka, Japan. Kudos go out to that. So now we have the first ever two-time NXT champions, Nakamura and Samoa Joe. And, of course, it was announced that they will have another match in Melbourne, Australia, but this time in a steel cage. So the saga continues between Nakamura and Samoa Joe. And, of course, next week, guys, yes, folks, it is the month of December, and we're going to start breaking it down. We are going to play a little fantasy game, Warfare, and we're going to do it the women's side. We're going to do WWE Attitude versus Reality Era Women's Tournament. We're going to get to pick women from the Reality Era and the Attitude Era. Now, that's the main rule, and then we're going to put them in a 16 women tournament, and we're going to advance them. And week by week, we're going to get to our finals, and this should be interesting. And we will have a special guest along the way to help us break that down. So that is coming up. And of course, so much more here on the High Spot Podcast. Excited more than ever to bring you this show every week.
Yeah, it'll be a little NCAA tournament bracket, which not only Jeff and I will break down, but we want to make sure we want to hear your reaction, whether you think we're completely far off or you agree with our assessment as we keep going down the bracket. We want to hear your comments on Twitter at High Spot Podcast, as well as our partnership with Brain Stew Radio Network at Brain Stew Radio, because you guys are the reason why we do this. So, for the Jersey Wrecking Crew, my tag team partner Jeff Martin, I am Brian Berg of the Trendsetter. You guys have been listening to the High Spot Podcast, and after listening to this episode and the road to WrestleMania almost here, oh boy, you know it, life's gonna be just too sweet.